welcome everyone to the assembly this evening. I'm going to kind of do a little bit of an adjustment to our schedule as far as our Sermon on the Mount. Because there's a verse in here that kind of seems almost out of place that kind of got skipped. And so I don't want to skip it because it's such an important verse. And it's something that we hear a lot about. It's Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. And as we've studied through the Sermon on the Mount, sometimes there appear to be verses that just, they really don't seem to fit. Until you start studying them and then you realize they really didn't. Maybe we just had kind of a misunderstanding of the verse itself. So this part was actually kind of, as far as George Batty was concerned, went with the previous section. But it kind of got a little bit omitted, so I decided to pick it up. And a lesson that I've entitled, Do Also to Them. So in Matthew, the 7th chapter, verse 12. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Now that may sound familiar to you. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. You know, we've just started up the new school year, and it seems like teachers are going to have a syllabus, they're going to have class rules, and I guarantee nearly every one of them involves some form of this edict. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Treat others like you want to be treated. You know, we've got a real problem in our, not just in our schools, but in our society. Bullying, that is a huge red letter issue we have to deal with now. Especially with all this nonsense on cyber media and, you know, cell phones and Facebook and Instagram and all of these things that have, you can just sit there and say whatever you want to about anybody at any time. And it's terrible. And so we're really trying to teach kids nowadays, do unto others as you would have done unto you. You may recognize that, the golden rule. Have you heard it like this? Treat others the way you would want them to treat you. And that is from Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. I also discovered in researching this, I didn't know this, because there's a day for everything. There's, you know, hamburger day and flag day and Dunkin' Donut day. Well, April the 5th, according to whoever decides these things, is known as the Golden Rule Day. And I wish we would treat every day as the Golden Rule Day, and not just April the 5th. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. But Jesus even takes it a little bit step further because he says, for this is the law and the prophets. And maybe that's something that we don't look at that part very much. And that's what we're trying to look at for a little while this evening. But before we go further, let's go to God and the Word. So what about this verse, the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Did you notice it started with the word therefore? And so in verse 12, it begins with therefore. Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. That word therefore always catches my attention when I'm reading the scripture, because as a math person, I know how important the word therefore is. It is a legal term. It is a concluding thought that you will have, you'll begin to put up your argument and you'll begin to list reasons. When you say therefore, you are referring back to what you have just said. It's a concluding term. It's like the defense attorney has listed out the case. Therefore, this man is innocent or this man is guilty, something of that nature. So it's a legal term. So we've got to tie verse 12 together with the preceding thoughts. So what were the themes of the previous passage? Well, we have to go back to what we talked about last week, what the lesson was last week. Matthew 7, verses 7 through 11. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. So that therefore is tying together this concept of, you know, do good to your neighbor, treat others as you want to be treated. It's tying back to this passage where it's ask, knock, and seek. And so I think that if you think about it, it does fit together. My first thought was, well, this verse kind of seems a little bit out of place. until we look at it in its context. It does make sense. The idea would be, if we're going to ask, seek, and expect things from God, therefore, we should be willing to do good things for others. If we expect God to do good things for us and bestow all these blessings upon us, then how much more should we be willing to do good things for our neighbors? Take care of one another. Help each other out. Does it make sense that we would expect God to be merciful to us and then we treat the neighbor next door as a piece of trash? I mean, that doesn't even make sense. You know, we need to treat others as we would like to be treated. And that's really the origin of the golden rule. And it's really tied together, so highlight or underline that word, therefore, because that's what puts it all together. That if we're going to ask God for things, and we're going to expect God to take care of us, and God to give us things, well, guess what? We need to be willing to give things to others as well. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. So here's verse 12 again. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. So I highlighted that last part there. For this is the law and the prophets. You know, sometimes I kind of scratch my head and I'm thinking, the old law, boy, it sure was a law of punishment. It sure was a law of destruction. Even our reading this morning in Ezra, I don't know if you picked up on it, it was talking about how we're going to rebuild the temple and said, okay, anybody that doesn't want to listen or doesn't want to do right, it said, banish them, kill them, do whatever you have to do. And this is the law of love. I mean, this is the law of do whatever to men, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. And so it kind of sounds a little bit off sometimes because the Old Testament, the old law of Moses was so harsh. And I think that's what Jesus is trying to get to. In fact, I'll even say this. I think Jesus was almost prepping his disciples for a conversation that he was going to have sometime later. I'll let you think about it and see if we can make the same connection here. But Jesus says that was the purpose of the old law. For what you want men to do to you, do also to them. That was the purpose for the law of Moses. Even though sometimes we might not quite pick up on that, that's what the golden rule is all about. Let's go back to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 5. I understand that every red-blooded Hebrew was supposed to recite this verse at least twice a day. This was part of their daily, it was called the Shema. This was part that they read in the morning and the evening. So twice a day they recited this. Hear, O Lord, our hero Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. So they always talked about loving God with all their heart and soul and strength. That was part of the old law. Another part of the old law was found in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 17 through 18. It says, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. And so these two concepts, this idea of loving God with all your heart and your soul and loving your neighbor as yourself, you might be saying to yourself, wow, that sounds really, really familiar in the New Testament. Because that's something that's brought forth. I do want to make a note here. Who was the neighbor that the children of Israel were supposed to treat well? Who was their neighbor? Well, it says their neighbor here, don't bear any grudge against the children of your people. So you see how the idea of the Old Testament, the law of Moses, the idea of the neighbor was very, very condensed. It was the fellow Israelites were considered to be the neighbors. And so one Israelite was to treat another Israelite very well. Treat them as you wanted to be treated. Now if you were an Ammonite, if you were some heathen, if you were some Gentile, the rules didn't quite apply. You had to treat your fellow Israelites with great compassion. Treat them as you want to be treated. And I suppose the most obvious to me of those rules, remember, a Jew could not charge interest to a fellow Jew. And to me, that says more than anything. Treat others as you would like to be treated. If you're going to loan someone money, don't ever expect back interest. That was not allowed under the law of Moses. But here we see, love your neighbor as yourself. And so this concept had been taught. But there was a real question about, well, who is my neighbor? What defines the neighbor? And so I think Jesus is prepping for a conversation he's going to have a little bit later. And you may be thinking about it in your mind now. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. And I think that's where Jesus is already kind of going with this. He didn't really broach it in the Sermon on the Mount, but I think that's where he was headed. In Luke chapter 10, verse 25, the account of the Good Samaritan, and behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, What is written in the law? What is your reading of it? He said, Now look what this teacher, this lawyer, this man who knew the law of Moses upwards, backwards, left, right. Listen to what he said. So he answered and said, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. If you notice in the New King James Version, notice how that's all in quotations. It's like two separate phrases here. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind. That's Deuteronomy. And notice the second part, and your neighbor as yourself. It's like a second phrase because that's Leviticus. So what the lawyer had done, he had taken two different passages, one from Deuteronomy, one from Leviticus, and kind of put them together into one big sentence. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And so that's the two concepts that these the Israelites, the Jews, had been taught from the very beginning. In fact, that first part, as I said, they recited that twice a day. That was part of their culture. And so Jesus responds to him and says, You have answered rightly. He's right. That's what you're supposed to do. Do this and you will live. But, verse 29, him wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, And who is my neighbor? And that's where things begin to change from the old law to the new law. Maybe let me explain it like this. The Old Testament, I would say, was a minimal in this regard. Who were the fewest people that I could treat as a neighbor? Who were the fewest? Well, I only have to treat my fellow Jews as neighbors. I don't have to treat anybody that's not of the lineage of Abraham. They're not my neighbors. It's the smallest number possible. But Jesus is going to start telling some stories, and he's going to change up the whole scenario. And Jesus is going to make it, instead of being minimal, he's going to make it maximum. Who's the most people that I can consider my neighbor? You know, who can I consider my neighbor? Instead of who are the fewest that I can consider, is who are the most that I can consider. In fact, he goes on to talk, and he says there was a story about a man, and he was going on his way to Jericho, and he got beat up and left for dead on the side of the road, and the priest walked by and turned his nose up at him, you know, and another man walked down the side of the road, wouldn't even walk on the same side of the road, and here came a Samaritan, and the Samaritan had pity on him. And the Samaritan took him in and treated him, took care of him, cleaned him up, took him to the inn, paid for him, told the innkeeper, listen, I'll be back in a couple of weeks. If it costs any more money, I'll be glad to pay for it. Make sure this man gets taken care of. And then Jesus looks at this lawyer and he says, so who showed the most mercy? You know, who was the most fitting? Who was the neighbor? And the Jew, he couldn't even say, the Samaritan. He couldn't even bring himself to say the Samaritan because the Samaritans were hated by the Jews. He just said, well, I suppose it was the one who showed him mercy. He wouldn't even call him a Samaritan because that was just so against the Jewish way of thinking. And so now Jesus is saying, well, who's your neighbor? Well, it might be a Samaritan. It might be a Gentile. It might be of the tribe of Abraham. But see how now this definition of neighbor is beginning to grow. And under the Old Testament, it was very compact. It was only those that were of the nation of Israel. Now this definition of who is your neighbor is beginning to grow. It's going to include so many more. And that, I believe, is the big difference of the Old Testament to the New. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 13, he says, owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. See kind of that same concept Jesus was talking about, that the law was the law of love. He says, for the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there's any other commandment, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, there's my word again, therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. We are to love one another. Now, I got to looking at this verse, and I've read this a whole bunch of times, but I got to thinking, I don't know, something hit me this time. It was the part about love does no harm to a neighbor. Love does no harm to a neighbor. And so I got to thinking about what Paul had said here. It says, you should not commit adultery. Okay, I get that. That if I was to commit adultery with someone else's wife, I have harmed my neighbor because I've taken their wife. I understand that one. That makes sense. You shall not murder. Okay, I get that one. If I go out and I was to murder someone, I had harmed my neighbor, either by killing them or killing their family member. So I understand that that's causing harm to a neighbor. You shall not steal. Again, if I go take somebody's pickup truck, I get it. I have harmed them because I've taken their vehicle. You shall not bear false witness. That carries the connotation of lying under oath. So if I was to go lie under oath and get somebody thrown in prison, I have harmed them. I understand that. But then I got to this one. You shall not covet. And I got to think about that. If I covet something that you have, covet means I want something. I want something that you have. How does that harm my neighbor? If I really, really like your house, how does that harm you? If I sit around and think about how, you know, I love that house, I want that house, I want that house. How does that harm my neighbor? And so I got thinking about it, got to do a little study. In fact, there's a great amount of controversy kind of in the religious circles as far as those that are into the language and linguistics about what that word actually means. How does covet harm a neighbor? And so many think that that original word that's translated as covet means to both desire something to the point that you go take it. And some examples were given. I want you to imagine somebody who's poor and has very, very little, but they have something that I want. And one example is kind of sad, but it happens in the real world every day. It was talking about, you know, he's got a wife, and I like that wife, and I covet his wife, and this family has absolutely nothing. And I say, I'll give you a couple $100 every week if you will send your wife over to me a little bit. See, that's the idea of covetousness. Or maybe a man has very, very little. They have a little bitty piece of property, but it's something that I want. And I just keep on and keep on. Hey, I'll give you $100 for that piece of land. And I come back the next week, I'll give you $100 for that piece of land. And you just keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on until eventually you take what you want. And so as I looked at that part, instantly when I read that commentary, I was like, hey, I got a good example for that. Do we remember the story of King Ahab and Naboth's vineyard? That's covetousness. Oh, King Ahab had everything that he could possibly want, except one little thing. Naboth had his vineyard. And Naboth owned a vineyard right there pretty close, I guess, to the palace. And oh, Ahab started thinking, boy, this would be a perfect spot for me to have a garden. And he coveted it. He wanted it so bad. And he kept asking. And he went to Naboth and he said, Naboth, 1 Kings 21, he said, let me buy this land from you. Let me buy your vineyard. Or if you don't want me to buy it, I'll give you another vineyard. And Naboth said, no, this is mine. It's been in my family. I want to keep it. Now, I don't know how many times Ahab asked him. I get the feeling that Ahab probably, I'm guessing he asked him more than once. Because he just wanted it so bad and so bad. But it said he just went home and he laid down and pouted like a big old baby until eventually his wonderful old wife, Jezebel, come up and said, what's the matter? He told her the story. He said, Jezebel said, well, I'll get it for you. And they got it all right. In fact, they had Naboth killed They lied under oath. They had false witnesses come forward. And they killed Naboth in order to get his vineyard. So did coveting that land, did that bring harm to his neighbor? Oh yeah, not at first. Maybe not just because he wanted the land, but it has a connotation that you'll just keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on and keep on until eventually you take what you want. And in doing so, you harm your neighbor. 1 Kings 21 and 2. So Ahab spoke to Naboth saying, give me your vineyard that I may have it for a vegetable garden because it is near next to my house. And for it I'll give you a vineyard better than that or better than it. Or if it seems good to you, I'll give you its worth in money. But Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my father to you. He just kept on, kept on, kept on. I want you to think about how different this old world can be. How different would this world be? How different would schools be? How different would just the community be if people would follow this command? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If that was the case, would we withhold payment? You know, a lot of people, they don't pay their bills. That's amazing. If you owe somebody money, they want it. But when they owe somebody else, it becomes, well, I'll pay when I get around to it. You think people would withhold payment from others if we followed the golden rule? Yeah, I don't think so. You think we'd gossip? You think we'd talk about people? Well, nobody likes people talking about us, but did you hear what old so-and-so said? You think people would gossip if we truly followed the golden rule? You think people would speak harshly if we follow the golden rule? I don't know. I don't like people yelling at me. I don't know of anybody that really appreciates to get screamed at. So those people that are screaming at other people, I wonder, are they really following the golden rule? Do you think they would like to be treated like that as well? Would we judge inappropriately if we follow the golden rule? And I put that in there because, like we said, these verses sometimes seem out of place. Remember chapter 7, verse 1? Judge not that you be not judged. Oh, it's not out of place. Not at all. There's a whole system that's been built into this chapter that's finally starting to make a little bit of sense. If we truly love someone and we want others to do unto us as we would have done to them, you know, we're going to judge righteously. It doesn't say we're not to judge at all. But we would want to be ourselves judged righteously. And so, if we were to put verse 12 into play, then we would judge others righteously as well. We wouldn't go fault finding. You know, the plank in the eye and the speck of sawdust in the eye. We wouldn't go around looking for things to condemn on people because we don't want people looking for things to condemn on us because we're all sinful. It's not that we don't judge, but we don't want to judge inappropriately. We don't want people judging us harsher than what we should be because we don't want people doing that to us. So we should not do it to them. Would you cheat on your taxes? Would you fudge your expense reports? You know, I read another one, some little league somewhere, some guy absconded with, I think it was $75,000 from a little league. I don't know how sorry you'd have to be to steal from little kids playing baseball, but it happens. If you want people to treat you honestly, then you can't turn around and treat somebody else dishonestly. How different of a world would it be? Would you speed when you're driving? You know, I've got to think about this one. We live on a corner, and I'll tell you, when they set up our neighborhood, they did it wrong, in my opinion. Long streets are supposed to keep going, I think, and cross streets should have stop signs. That's the way I see it. Our neighborhood is backwards. On the long streets, they put the stop signs, and the cross streets have the right of way, which is pretty stupid to me. And I guess a lot of people think it's stupid because they just pretend like that stop sign is not even there. They just buzz through and never even cover the brake. And it aggravates me so much. And I'll sit out there when I'm working in my yard, and I thought about just recording them, or I don't know, it infuriates me. And I'm thinking, how can those people ignore the law? But I guarantee you, if somebody was to come cut donuts in their front yard, they'd be howling about it. I said, well, you can't do that. And if you're not going to follow this law, then how can you expect people to treat you legally and lawfully? So I think I'm just going to start cutting donuts in everybody's yard every time I see them run my stop sign. Because apparently, if you don't respect one law, then you must not respect other law. Because if people would treat the golden rule, I guarantee you, they would be running that stop sign. because they don't want people to run their stop sign either. They wouldn't speed when they're driving because they don't want other people to be speeding. It all kind of comes back together. There's an author by the name of Arthur Pink. He was a 20th century evangelical author of George Batty had this quote in his sermon. I thought it was pretty good. It is utterly vain to speak like angels when on our knees before God if we act like devils in our transactions. I think that's very true. We can say whatever we want to. Wait a minute. That brings up another word that we've been studying lately, isn't it? When you say all the right things and you do all the right things and you make sure everybody sees you on your knees speaking these angelic words before God, but then in real life you don't follow them. Isn't that what a hypocrite is? And that's what Jesus has been talking about this whole passage. Don't be like the hypocrites. If you're gonna want people to treat you well and treat you with respect, then you have to treat others with respect. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Don't be that guy that speaks flowery words in the church house on Sunday morning and then goes out on Monday morning and sees how many people they could rip off. Don't be that guy, because that's what a hypocrite is. So this is a completion of an earlier thought. And Jeff referenced this in the lesson this morning. This whole passage goes back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, early on in the Sermon of the Mount, that the righteousness of the Christian must exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees. That is what this whole passage has really been pointing back to. With different types of examples, we have to exceed the righteousness of the scribes. Jesus said, "For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." I think we all agree there's not going to be pedophiles in heaven. There's not going to be murderers in heaven. We all accept that. You know what else is not going to be in heaven? Hypocrites. There's not going to be a hypocrite in heaven. We have to be true to our word, and we have to do what we're supposed to do. Don't be like the Pharisee standing on the corner that everybody could see him in his long flowing robe as he was doing his daily prayers, and everybody could walk by and say, "Wow, what a righteous man that is." And then remember how Jesus said, they're like whited sepulchers. They're real clean and pretty on the outside, but inside they're full of dead men's bones. Don't be like the hypocrites. Matthew chapter 5, verse 43. Back up a little bit now in the Sermon on the Mount. "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect." You see how this definition of neighbor is getting enlarged? And it's against human nature. Love those that hate you. Pray for those who spitefully use you. It's not just hang around your fellow Israelites and ignore everybody else. No, this idea of the neighbor, it's who all can be considered neighbors. It's a maximum concept instead of a minimum concept. Okay, who are the absolute bare minimum that I have to treat neighborly? And I believe that's what Jesus was getting at. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. Let me keep closing. Just like our previous studies, the basic concept is that as Christians, we need to elevate our actions above that of others. It is not bare minimum. We need to exceed those expectations. Oftentimes, the way we should respond is completely and totally against human nature. Love those that hate you. That doesn't make much sense. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, sometimes your neighbor might not be too pleasant of a person. Love your neighbor as yourself. However, that mature, or as the Bible says, complete mature Christian is going to have to be able to change the way that they think, change the way that they speak, change the way that they interact with people and change the way that they live. Remember what the Bible says when Jesus got done with the Sermon on the Mount? It says the people, they were astounded at the teachings of Jesus. That's why, because he's teaching us to do things that are against human nature. It doesn't make sense, but that's what the Lord expects of his children. So I'll leave you with this thought this evening.